Jamie and Chris, as always. We're going to have another great episode where we dive into, did we set a topic for this one? I know we just talked about it. I'm like a goldfish. What's our topic?
The topic, I don't know how to make it like a clear one sentence topic, Jamie, but is the idea of how individual performers are perceived on stage by the audience before they've even spoken. I don't know if it's that specific, but like when, hey, it's this team and 5 to 7 to 9 people walk out on stage and they're clapping and the audience is doing these snap judgments of who they're seeing. I think there's a lot of information there. And I think certain players get away with doing some stuff that other players can't do for sure. I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting. Then there's race, of course, and gender, of course. I'm just even thinking about like, I don't know, like tall and short and wide or skinny or everything in between, like, or if you're deemed attractive or funny looking or, you know, all that stuff I think comes into play when you're doing scenes. I know I've been talking a bunch, but just immediately I think about like status in scenes. I don't think a lot of people want to see a large male, I'll say, you know, a large white male starting off a scene screaming at a woman, at a, maybe a petite woman or whatever, a woman. Like that's, it just feels off, even though they're just playing characters. Whether, I'm not saying that's right or wrong, because the female player might be fine with it or even initiate that. But I think sometimes an audience can be like, oh, I don't like what I'm seeing here based on, you know, how they perceive the players.
Yeah, especially if our goal is comedy, right? I mean, I think if you're doing some improvised dramas, even though it might be uncomfortable, that might be sort of the goal of an improvised drama. But if you're trying to do improvised comedy, that sort of example, right, of the large angry white male can be off-putting and certainly like not lead us down a comedic path. Yeah, it's funny, as you were talking about it, I'm thinking about conversations we've had about casting and, you know, does casting sometimes try to benefit younger, attractive people because those might be people others would be interested in seeing or that we're sort of implicitly like biased towards those performers in some ways. I'm also thinking about like cast makeups where there was a show the other night where it was sort of 3 women and 1 guy, right? And immediately you're starting to build all sorts of preconceived notions about the different performers and how they're carrying themselves. And I do think that there's a lot you can go into here, from casting to how you dress to how the team even treats each other with, like you sort of said, status. Like, are there different statuses on the teams? Jamie, you look very thoughtful.
I am thoughtful. Because, yeah, I don't know where I fully land on some of this. I mean, Susan Messing said, just when Sam and I were in the annoyance intensive, she's like, improv is great because you can be anybody who you've wanted to be and anybody who you've never wanted to be. So you can be a supermodel or you can be a, you know, a crazy psychopath murderer, you know, and everything in between. And I'm like, that's interesting. And I wonder if that is kind of the promise of improv, but also it butts up against the reality of, well, actually, no, you know, you can play those characters, but to what degree of success, I guess, is the question. Like, you can play, you know, if I look a certain way, I can play something that is not me, but then do I have more work to do to get the audience caught up with, you know, I have more selling to do. I have to act, I don't know, I have to be more convincing. I have to help have the audience suspend their disbelief more, rather than if I played more to type, then the audience is easier. They're more willing to buy in. So it's interesting to think that, yeah, maybe, I guess you, on paper, you can play anything, but like, does the audience buy it? Are they, you know, more detached from a performance that they don't believe in because the person they're actually seeing on stage doesn't match in any way the character they're purporting to be? And so you have to really bring in those acting chops to kind of bridge that gap. And so I'm kind of just have all these thoughts swirling around in my head. And I guess I tend to play closer to self just because I, you know, as we've said many times, I like to try to play from a place of inspiration. It's hard for me to be inspired if I'm super far away from where I'm feeling or where I'm at physically or mentally or energy wise. So it's hard that I feel like as a performer, I have more work to do to like try to climb that ladder into this character, as opposed to if I can kind of just play from where I'm at, then I can lock in quicker and then go from there. And then maybe it builds into something, you know, crazy or wild, but it was kind of organic. So I don't know.
Well, it seems to be like there's the performer's struggle, like you're talking about, Jamie, and then there's what the audience is seeing. Like going against type is sometimes a sure way, it's a sure way to get some laughs. Sam, you just mentioned the idea of like somebody bigger being a ballerina, or if there was just somebody that looked like a ballerina in their day-to-day lives and they did a ballerina scene, there's nothing inherently funny about that. Or like Frank Coyote playing a baby is really funny. You know, the way he walks and waddles and stuff, it's really funny. But like, yeah, I don't know. Also, geez, we're kind of scattered with this, but this is what happens when you don't prepare. But I also think like some people are allowed to do stuff that others aren't allowed to do. I was on a team with this dude for a long time who was a little funnier looking. That seems rude, but just like a little more character looking. And he could get away with saying stuff because the audience didn't perceive him as like any kind of threat, I think, necessarily, because he was kind of smaller in stature and, you know, a little skinnier. I mean, funny, fantastic dude, but he would say stuff and the audience would laugh. And I would try to like jump in on that piece in a pod, that thing. And they'd be like, not you, dude. You don't get to say that. And, you know, I'm not saying woe is me. I'm not saying poor me. I'm just saying I have experienced that. Or we all know players that could walk out and say any line and get a laugh just because they're kind of funnier in general. And I use this example with some players. I won't name necessarily, but they could walk out and say, I want a peanut butter sandwich. And the audience is already laughing. But for me, I feel like I have to go, I want a peanut butter sandwich. And then go into, because here's my why, and here's my philosophy, and here's my point of view, and here's, I feel like I have to do a lot more like work to get a laugh when I walk out on stage. I don't think people are typically rooting for me or going, he's going to be funny. I don't think they give me that. Not that everybody has that. Not that it's, and I'm not saying it's harder for me. It's just something I've noticed.
Yeah, I can definitely see the challenges. I mean, I've personally experienced the challenges of being a very attractive improviser, and people just don't think that you're funny when you're so stunningly handsome. You know?
Can we talk about that for 1 second, though? I mean, that was like the thing for a while, right? Even like Louis C.K. made that kind of like famously known, like, hey, good looking people, leave comedy alone. It's for us, you know? And it's like, oh, okay. Not that I'm like that good looking, but I'm just saying, like, you know, jeez.
But that's interesting, though.
Looking guru, okay, is what I'm trying to say. Okay.
It's interesting, though, to think that, you know, the comedian, and I've thought about this a lot, too, because people say, oh, you know, people who do stand up are like depressed, or, you know, there's something. The comedy comes from trauma and things like that. It's like, is comedy, or do we perceive comedy to come from, you know, some kind of some lacking characteristic? So it's not for attractive people because they already have, you know, societal acceptance. It's for people who, you know, look funny or have funny backgrounds or have, you know, a funny childhood or something like that. Like, is comedy, do we perceive comedy as being something that's for like the deficient?
I feel like maybe for a long time that might have been the thing, but these days there's a lot of good-looking men, women, and other stand-ups out there. You know what I mean? It's not just for goofballs or whatever. Like, I think there's a lot of like cool and hip comics that are attractive and funny.
Yeah, pretty people can be funny, but I mean it's so funny to me because. Jamie, I think you have a very specific look that you cultivate. And so when you step out on stage and you're generally dressed in all black, you have a shock of blonde hair, you have sort of an athletic build. I'm kind of curious what the audience puts on top of you in some ways, just sort of seeing that. And I want to contrast this with the show you did in LA while we were in Chicago, where what stepped out with Chris in that show was a man in a full black bodysuit with an iPad strapped to their face. And there's certainly a different perception when that image steps out onto the stage as opposed to Jamie, the person in sort of theater blacks.
I think about this moment fondly, but there was a clown class. I think it was specifically an idiot workshop class where at the end of the 8 weeks, like each one of the students got on stage by themselves. And then the audience and the teacher just like said what they thought of you, just looking at you on stage, which I'd like, first of all, that's so gutsy. And it took me that the first class that anybody ever did anything like that. I'm like, oh, this is wonderful. This is so valuable to know how I'm perceived when I'm just standing on a stage, not doing anything at all. What does the audience think of me? How do they feel about me? What energy am I giving off? And a lot of the comments were like, you look intense and threatening. And then when you smile, you have a really nice smile, but then it also kind of looks evil. So I'm like, oh, that's really interesting to know that like I have like, I exude some kind of dark energy. Maybe it's because I wear all black, or maybe it's my facial features or whatever it is. But it was interesting to know like, oh, I guess I can really tap into like a dark, evil, intense energy really easily on stage. And so it's been fun to play with that or play against it and be super sweet and low status while also looking, you know, intense. So it's, that was super interesting. And then this iPad show, it's hard to tell. It's honestly hard to tell because there were so many technical glitches that it's hard to get a read on what the audience's experience of the concept of the show was, because there was a glare on the iPad and there was like glitches of, you know, delays in the internet, but it was a really fun experience. I would like to try it again, but hopefully figure out the technical issues of it. But I think immediately seeing an iPad strapped to somebody's head, you know, it already has like this duality of like, this is so stupid and also looks scary. Chris, you were on stage with Liam and my iPad. What were your thoughts during that show? Like, what did you think the audience, what was the audience's reaction in the room to the visual of it?
They were excited by it for sure. And I think that's about the extent of it all. We had a couple of funny little scenic moments for sure. Jamie played well with some repetition that came back, and that was fun. But I'd say 90% of the entire performance was watching Liam in a full black bodysuit try to carry an iPad on his head. You know what I mean? It wasn't about like what the quote unquote scenes were about. Like I said, there was a smattering of that for sure. And I was thankful to the audience that night and for they were on board. It looked like they all looked at each other and said, all right, this is not going to be super clean. And they gave us the benefit of the doubt and they had fun with it anyway. And so that allowed us to have fun on stage for sure. You know, if I was doing that for like some kind of showcase or something, or like an audition, I would be scared that it wasn't working well. But because it was just, let's just try this, that was really fun. Really quick, Jamie, I did a branding workshop once for an acting class, which is what similar to your experience. It was on Zoom though, and it was like 30 people in the Zoom room, and one at a time you speak to the person who is running the branding workshop, talk to them for 2 minutes. And in those 2 minutes, people are taking a poll, a survey based on you. And then at the end of your 2 minutes, when you're done talking, just a little back and forth so people can kind of hear you a little bit. You got this chart, this graph of like how you read to people who don't know you. It was really interesting to find out some of the ways people felt about me. More importantly, how it contrasted with how I felt about myself. And I always thought that was one of my biggest issues when it came to auditioning for television and film is I have this assumption of the way people, I assume they're seeing me one way and they're not. You know, people thought I looked nice and seemed helpful and like maybe have gone to church and would give money back to somebody if they dropped a wallet and would help an old lady across the street, where in my head, if I had to guess, I would have said that they would have said, bad guy, gangster, has committed crime. Like like that. And I think I carry that into onto the stage, into my auditions. And there could be a, not could be, there is a disconnect when I think casting is bringing me in for one reason and they're bringing me in for another. So I think that's also lends itself to the improv stage as well, where sometimes I feel, or it's not as much anymore because I've done some work, but I used to feel like these people can tell I'm like a bad kid. Like these people can tell I'm like, I'm a dark dude, but really it's strangers thought I looked nice or pleasant. Well, that's interesting to me.
This is interesting. That also must be challenging for some of the things that you're, you know, sort of saying like, oh, well, that person can get away with it, but I can't. Like, I actually sort of feel some of those impulses and like your internal metric is focused that way, but your external metric is kind of getting read a lot differently by people.
Well, let's go into one particular topic, which not a lot of people probably want to hear the opinion of three white appearing men about, but just quickly, it's worth noting, you know, I'm Hispanic, I'm half Hispanic, my father's from Honduras, and there's a lot of history and like family stuff in my body and in my heart. You know, my cousins and my uncles and stuff are Hispanic, that I don't get to share that part of me on stage because I don't appear that way. And that's okay. But I am aware of that. Like, I can't do, I don't know, a Latin character, say, you know, or I could, but I don't think it would be taken well. And I think there was a moment where I was like, that's annoying, but it isn't so, I can also, like I said this recently, I can also just play a tomato or a duck. You know what I mean? I don't have to, that's okay. I'm not using my improv scenes to talk about the love of my Latin family. Like, that's okay that I can't do that. But it is a thing that I think about sometimes, like, like this is, it's a large part of me. It's not like somebody in my family line once spent a weekend in Mexico. No, like my dad, you know what I mean? Like, who's somebody I'm very close with. I'm not really allowed to use that stuff. I'm okay with that. And I'd rather not make people uncomfortable because I have some agenda or I need to talk about that. That's okay. I can just be a talking balloon instead.
It's interesting you say not allowed because I met an improviser here in Philadelphia who, kudos to them, they were in Vegas and would drive to LA for Groundling classes, which I think is hats off if you were driving 4 hours to go to your improv classes each way. But, you know, Groundlings does have very strict rules. And I'm hearing this like secondhand. I have not taken Groundling classes, but where you are supposed to be playing characters of your gender, right? There's not a lot of cross gender play there. I also think they're more towards human characters. They're not trying to do inanimate objects come to life. But it was interesting to me. I went in Chicago and saw a sitcom show. I'm obsessed with the sitcom as a medium and a form, especially in improv. I'm always curious to see what people are doing with it. And there was a recurring show where they had sort of like established characters and they were like, this is season 2, episode 8 of the show we're doing. So I'm like, okay, so you've all developed these characters. And I think the entire cast was, you know, women presenting, possibly women identifying or non-binary. But it was a little... It took me out of that show specifically when some of the female performers were playing male characters. So I was like, oh, this is, and I wouldn't say that normally for any improv show. It was just like kind of specifically for this one with the genre of sitcom as a format where I'm so used to seeing it on my TV and you're seeing people play their genders basically. I was a little surprised by how much it just took me out of the show for a second because I'm like, okay, like I get it. You're playing bro-y guys, like fun characters to play. If that was in like a Herald, totally get it. Just for my expectations of sitcom, it just kind of felt a little off. And I don't know. I don't know how you guys feel about that sort of thing, or if you have experience with that Groundlings approach, or if there are other schools that do similar kinds of, you look like this kind of performer, so we want you to play this kind of character.
Yeah, please go ahead, Jamie.
I think you're right that Groundlings used to do. I think, you know, in the past, just even 3 years or so, I think that's loosened up as people have become more sensitive to those things. You know, I don't know. I don't know this firsthand either. So here we go with all of our secondhand knowledges. But I remember taking a sociology class that was talking about like the differences between like American and Japanese theater. And like in American theater, performers and audience members will bring in their outside knowledges, perspectives, and will judge performances the same as they would as if it was on the street in their living room or as if it's in the theater. Like they kind of bring themselves into the theater. Whereas I guess in Japanese comedy clubs, it's understood that it's kind of like a anything goes. And so people go nuts in comedy spaces and play all these outrageous, offensive characters, things that you would never see on the outside. But audiences understand that this is theater. This is a place to go nuts and kind of be liberated from all of those social norms. And I guess I'm just, to me, I kind of see that as part of this conversation is like, yeah, as audience members, should we be bringing in our outside morals and perspectives and biases and politics and preferences to the theater? Or should the theater kind of be a place of like cuckoo liberation, go wild, and we all understand that this is what this is, and then we can go on and go be good people in your day-to-day life, but here you can kind of go crazy. To me, there's something really interesting and exciting about that, because it would be fun to see, yeah, what would a show look like if it was complete, it was an amoral space where you weren't bringing in your outside perspective. You weren't, I guess, sexually assaulting other people and doing things that like physically harmed other people, but content wise, I guess I should say, like you can just go nuts. That's interesting to me. And I don't know. I think about that with respect to some of this stuff, because I think audiences, if they see, you know, the overweight man playing, you know, what we would think is like a thin character, a ballerina or a little girl or whatever, an audience might not know if they're allowed to laugh at that, you know? And like, then does that hold the performer back? Do they have to play into type because the audience is uncomfortable because they don't know if they're allowed to, or they need somebody's permission to be able to laugh at that? And I don't know. We just have all these very complicated psychological mechanisms going on. And I guess, I don't know if I like that.
I think that it's again about expectations. And if you set up a night of insanity, then the people can brace themselves for that and have a good time. I mean, UCB used to have that show Celebrity Barf Machine, which I went to a couple years in a row. No phones allowed, no pictures, no videos. And we saw the craziest shit. And like a lot of it, very disgusting, a lot of just gross, crazy stuff. I don't even think they would do today, even if it was a secret show. But you walked in there understanding that this is an insane show. So you could get grossed out and stuff, but I don't think anybody was taking offense to anything, you know what I mean? Which was different than just like your normal walking in off the street to an improv show, which by the way, nobody does. No one's ever walked in off the street to an improv show. Let's be honest. We keep pretending like there's this audience out there that's like, I want to go see the theater tonight. And they're not doing it. And furthermore, matter of fact, with all these ideas about right or wrong or what you can or cannot do, I don't really feel that on stage. I don't really feel these like pressures or these like, I don't feel like I'm being held back from expressing my truest self. You know what I mean? Maybe I have a different agenda when I'm on stage. Maybe the specific performer's wants and needs or what they want from a show is different. But like, I never feel like that. Matter of fact, I've been lucky enough to teach twice at the Camp Improv Utopia. And that's a very interesting space where it's really there to protect everybody, but the students, the campers and stuff. And it's a lot of conversation about personal triggers and traumas and this and that. It's really interesting. It was a little bit overwhelming when I first got there, like, whoa, how's anybody going to do anything? But you realize, or I realized, just having that conversation out loud before the weekend begins sets people up in a nice headspace. That accidents can be made, and that's okay. No one's being canceled or asked to leave. we can have a discussion about that, that you yourself, when you're in a scene or in the class, can just simply walk out if you want. You can stop and walk out and stuff like that. Like, I had one idea about that going into it and leaving. I thought, I think it's good. It's allowing people then to, especially those that have experienced a lot of traumas and stuff, they get to play in a space that they feel is a little safer than just like your random class, I guess. I don't know. But even in my classes, for all these years that I've taught, it's pretty cool. People typically aren't assholes. And occasionally there is a person and you handle them. You take them out back and you beat them with a pipe. No, you know, you have that conversation or you report it to the theater or whatever. But I'd say for the most part, people just want to, like I said earlier, they want to play ducks or they want to play lawyers or they want to play knights or kings. And it's, we can all play that, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny. The jumping off point is sort of like what the expectation is when a performer comes out. And I'm trying to keep it away from wardrobe, but like knight or king, like if you walk out and you're kind of in, you know, it's a Jane Austen show and you walk out in costume, I'm probably going to be a little bit more excited for it than if it's a Jane Austen show and you're not in costume, right?
But what if it's just an improv show? It's no genre, and then you just do a Jane Austen style scene. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Well, sure. Well, let's talk about this. What, let's just say it's a regular improv show, no particular genre or theme. What are the right and wrong wardrobe choices right now? Just to help, you know, just to be the authority on this right here, right now. What is allowed? What is not allowed? And why? I would say what's not allowed is flip-flops. I don't want to see your feet on stage unless for some reason the shoes have been taken off for some reason and you need to expose your feet, then fine. But I find flip-flops and sandals to be jarring on stage. And it looks like they came here from the beach. And like, I want to see people who look like they care about their work, and people in flip-flops look like the opposite of that. They look relaxed and, you know, kind of on vacation from whatever their real life is. So for me, rule number one, no flip-flops, no sandals. I'd like to see socks and shoes. Shoes. I don't even need socks. I just need shoes. Closed-toed shoes.
No hats. We don't need to wear your trucker hat that says Venice on it, or backwards hat. A&M. Is that a college? A&M?
Yeah.
What, there are a lot of A&Ms.
Okay. Are there a lot of A&Ms?
Yeah. Every, can we talk about every that? State probably has an A&M, just about. Yeah.
Because we all know that A&M stands for...
Isn't it agriculture and mechanics?
That's right.
Yep. Cool. Agriculture. Yeah. So I don't need to see whatever state your A&M hat is from. You know what I mean? Just so many. Because I always see all these. I see Florida A&M, Texas A&M, Utah. And I just see every state on the hat. So no more hats.
Yeah, we settled it. Every state does have an A&M.
Let me ask this follow-up question. And I want to hear Sam's rule. Do these same rules apply to rehearsals and workshops and classes as well? Because to me, I mine work both ways. To me, I don't want to see hats in class, really. I don't really want to see socks. I don't want to see sandals in class for the same reasons mentioned.
Yeah, I'll say my thing and then I'll say my exceptions to it. I like shirts that have minimal graphics, right? I don't care if there's a little like pocket, you know, whatever for the brand thing, but I just don't want the graphic over the whole shirt. And I also want pants, especially for men on stage. My exception to what you're talking about for rehearsals, Jamie, is I don't care if you wear a graphic tee to a rehearsal. I don't care if you wear shorts to a rehearsal. I care more that you're comfortable than that you're presentable in that class. At the same time, generally, I would prefer either shoes or barefoot. There are some barefoot rehearsal situations, which I'm open to. And then, yeah, again, probably no to the hat in general. That's maybe more of a taste thing than a practical thing in those sorts of rehearsals. But for shows, I like pants. They tell me you're serious about getting up on stage. Same thing, the graphic tees, it's just distracting, especially if you're not playing to the graphic tee. And there's stupid ways that it will pull me out, right? So depending what the graphic tee is, if it's one specific, let's say it's a sports team, and you're playing a scene with a different specific that's not that sports team, it's just going to drive me nuts. if you start using that t-shirt, then it becomes more of a costume, and like, fair. Okay, now we're kind of in like using your clothes as costumes, which is fine by me. But
so, okay. So, I mean, we're not saying everybody right now who's listening is agreeing with us. Okay. We're not saying anything new. Oh, no sandals, no hats, no cargo shorts. Yeah. We get that, but let's go. Let's yes. Oh, well, I guess. Okay.
Sam's saying you'd be surprised, right?
Yes,
like,
I guess
like we have to say these things because.
Okay. Fine. A couple other things that I thought are obvious, like, I've seen some women wear like low cut tops, and that's been, what's the word I'm looking for? It's I can't think of the word, it doesn't matter, but like, we don't want to see a lot of your body, you know, that much, like no shorts, the skirts or dresses or something like that. Oh, Sam's thinking about it.
What's well, I don't want to see a lot of men's skin either.
Agreed.
I don't want your shirt to be unbuttoned and
agreed,
you know, you're half dressed.
Distracting, by the way, was the word. Distracting was what I was, because you know, in class sometimes that would happen, and so, oh, it's a little distracting. So
I want to get back to yours, Chris. I think for me, I agree with that. And I think I would phrase it as, and I want you to wear clothes that you can move in without having to fix. So like if you're wearing a short skirt and then like it rides up because you're doing something crazy, then you're like worried about like, oh, people are seeing you, then don't wear clothes that will like expose you or potentially like, you know, let things come out that you don't want to come out, or that might distract from what you're trying to do. And then you have to like worry about maintaining, you know, your modesty rather than just being in the scene. So that's what I would say.
My one exception to this is the love handles on a fat guy. If you're a guy and you want to wear a shirt and you've gained a little bit of weight, this also works for women and non-binary. I'm not going to make any specifics here, but like, I'm okay with a shirt that rides up a little bit, you know, it's like, get it. We all get our own struggles.
Okay.
It's a comedy, classic image, right? Come on.
Okay. Okay. I want to bring up something that I feel like isn't talked about a lot, which is, and you see this more in class shows, especially with newer improvisers who haven't done a lot of shows. I'll tell them in class, all right, class show's coming up, no graphic tees, no hats, no flip-flops. You know, we want to look nice. We're doing a show. We want to look nice and, you know, professional. Sometimes people take that to dress like business casual or something, or like they're going on a date, like a button down Oxford, but it's like three buttons lower on the man. You know, you can smell the cologne. Like I think that can look, that could be a little distracting as well when someone's wearing like, you know, $200 dress shoes on stage. It gets I'm picturing one person in particular, and I appreciate the effort. I do. But I think that gets also a little distracting. And back to what you're saying, Jamie, it's a little more difficult to do a show in like really nice khakis with a tucked in, but you know, button down shirt and nice shoes that you don't want to scuff. You know what I mean? It gets a little funky as well. I can see people, they kind of dress up too much to that end. So there's dressing down, dressing up. To me, and I've never done this, I think there's a cool way to do it. And again, I've never done it myself, but like everybody's wearing like a beige, like a muted earth tone. And everybody's wearing similar like t-shirts and kind of loose fitting movable pants, and maybe they're all wearing like white Converse or something, kind of like cult like okay. And what I'm trying to do here is I'm trying to put the performer in a place where they are in a neutral zone. As soon as they walk out, they don't read hipster, or they don't read overly dressed up guy going on a date, or they don't read frat guy. It's this thing where the audience kind of can't make that snap judgment. Maybe their hair or the way they keep their facial hair, if they have some, but they walk out, everybody kind of looks the same. I'm picturing this like these like Japanese stores like Muji, or even like Uniqlo. This like, I know I'm going nuts, but so what? And I just think it looks so cool that if you can't tell someone's, you know, how much money they make or don't make, or, you know, all that type of stuff. Like, it's kind of like a school uniform, right? A school uniform, there's people can't express themselves, quote unquote, but also kind of evens the playing field for those who don't have. And I think that'd be kind of neat to see like the uniform. Ooh, I'm selling myself more on this. And I don't think it needs to be all black. I think that is an option for sure. But I just think, I don't know, something muted, something a little like, I don't know, like a soft green, a soft beige, a sand. And now the performers are ready to don these costumes of knights and kings and dragons and everything else, and Starbucks workers. What do we think about that? What do we think about the uniform?
I like uniforms for teams.
You do?
I think it's an important conversation to have if you're really curating something, to say like, what is our uniform like? And I think like we've established the base rules, but getting a little bit more into what you're talking about, which is like, is there a color palette that we want to limit ourselves to? Only
the thing
white,
is, Sam,
white, black, and blues.
But this is weird. And I see it pretty regularly with a couple of teams I see regularly. There's even the, okay, we're all going to wear blue jeans and black shirts. Maybe I'm crazy. Well, I am crazy. And I've struggled with a lot of anxiety, which makes me kind of particular. And I want to control the things I can control. But in theory, blue jeans, black shirts sounds like we'll be uniform. But then you got the different fits. You got the skinny jean over here. You got the baggy one that's unfitted. They're stepping on the heels of their pants. These jeans are really worn out. These are brand. Even that could be distracting to me and also tell me a lot about the player and inform me. So now I'm having those preconceived ideas before they've even started speaking, like, oh, this person cares. This person doesn't care. And not that one's better or the other, just I'm starting to make these judgments, especially if the jeans are like extra fitted or have distressedness to them, right? So now, again, I want it to be also the black shirt. Nobody can get the black shirt right. Everybody's getting the black shirt wrong. It's a different, it's a dark navy blue that they thought was black in their poorly lit apartment. And that's like, fuck. Or this guy has a black shirt, but it does have a white A&M on the collar, you know, and that's all, it was the best that person could do. And it's like, okay, Steve, like you're doing your best here. But that's kind of distracting because, you know, what A&M, first of all, and then second of all, there's an A&M there. And so, right, there's all these little adjustments to even the black top and the blue bottom. So again, I'm talking about this, like, we're all wearing clothes we don't typically wear. You know, both Jamie and Liam sometimes wear funky clothes in like rehearsal, especially to move. Like Jamie's making a face like he doesn't wear funky clothes.
Oh no, his like tight bottom sweatpants that just kind of like clutch. And you're like, all right, Jamie, that's what you're going with today.
That's what I go with every day, man.
And Liam will wear like an active chino. And by that, I mean like a chino that's
active chino. Is anybody even listening to this podcast?
I will say there is a store here in Philly and it's like active wear suits. It's like suits for athletic people that you want to be able to move in. I was like, oh man, if they made them my size, I don't think they do because that's not me, but I would love a whole team in those suits moving around in them. Why not? It sounds like you want a field trip to the mall, Chris. It feels like just grab back from your
Hold
closet.
On. I always do. I love to shop, but Jamie yeah, might be right.
Saying, I'm sorry, active chino.
No, I think Jamie's right. I think people have stopped listening. So let's pull out a little bit. What are some of the...
Well, I do want to say, Chris, because I was just absorbing it. I love this idea of yours, you know, the like a modern neutral uniform, because it would make it's like when you go into these stores in like East Hollywood, where they're like kind of funky and cool. And there's everything's a neutral color palette. Like it's, you know, because the neutrals and the earth tones are so modern and hip right now, that it would be cool. Or interesting to see improvisers like embody contemporary fashion styles rather than like it's always kind of like casual. The plaid is always the common go-to, which I actually don't see much plaid anymore, but I think it would be cool, like, yeah, because if you were all like dressed modern, like would that affect your performance? I feel like it would. Dude. Like it's like when you feel cool going into those cool stores, it's like I feel like that would translate onto the stage and maybe people would perform in a different way, maybe not better, I don't know, but it feels like that would definitely affect the performer themselves and then the audience's perception of it as well. I think it's really cool. I'm on board. Let's do it.
Thank you. I remember the first time, one of the first in-person Chris Alvarado improv workshops I did, it was a it was a success and we were all like hugging. I was hugging the students. Wow, you know, we were in lockdown, whatever. We've been on computers and now we're here and this felt so good. And then this woman said, like, do you have any ideas about like do you have more ideas for workshops, like different things we can do? I'm being vague right now, but I remember I didn't tell her, but in my head I was like, I have one where we all dress the same, which is kind of what we're talking about here now. Like, I look at fashion stuff all the time. This is a great podcast, by the way. I'm sure people are riveted. And I love fashion. And I always think, I always wonder, how could I bring that here? But I rarely think about the uniform. The way I think about it would kind of take over some of the improv. So that's not, I don't think that's beneficial. But if they're, Sam, Jamie, we walk into that place in Silver Lake, right? It's got those $24 candles. You walk in, the field notebooks off to the side, right? $24 for a pack, right? Everything's $24 here. Everything's very expensive. We find just these nice light cotton, beige, good material, a good thickness to a tee, just a tee. Maybe it's a little baggy. Matching pants. Again, I think maybe a white canvas shoe. I'm willing to go with a different shoe. And we just walk out, boom. Hi, we're the Comedy Fix. We're in a neutral position, As a matter of fact, as somebody who wears product in their hair, no hair product. Just, you know, and that's a big deal for me, Sam. I wear product every day, okay?
I know.
And then we just, you know, we are vessels. We're vessels. We ask for that suggestion and we begin to embody it. And then the audience gets to see it all.
You know, woo! I mean, first of all, Chris, I'm free this weekend. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Secondly, it was interesting to me, Sam, when we went to Chicago, we were on our way to go see a show at Steppenwolf. It was either before or after, I can't remember. But we passed by this furniture store. I'm like, oh, let's stop in here. There's a cool lamp in the window and I'm looking for lighting in my new place. And Sam was horrified. He was absolutely horrified by the furniture, looking around at these overpriced things and things like that. I'm like, oh, this is great. I love that. This is great. So it was interesting to me. And then we both went to the theater. I think we stopped at the furniture store before. We both went to the theater and we both commented on like the beautiful stage. And the stage was, it was beautifully lit. The furniture was lovely. The wallpaper was there. So it was interesting to me. I was thinking to myself like, oh, Sam doesn't like it when it's a furniture store, but he likes it when it's on a stage. And it was interesting to me to think about like how we perceive, I'm not saying there's anything wrong about it. It was just interesting. And I can see Sam during your, you know, Silver Lake conversation was shaking his head. And I was like, oh, what is it that when, Sam, are you interested in the aesthetics of something and when not, and why, if there's anything you can think of to respond to that? Cause it was really interesting to me. And I'm like obsessed with the aesthetics in my apartment and then also on stage and so on. It's just interesting. If you can give us the counter view of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I was talking to my partner about what you had said when I was like, why are you so interested in sort of like interior decoration? And he said something to the effect of like, you are creating its own version of a theatrical experience, or you're creating a sort of experience for people when they walk into your house and they see that kind of space. I'm not going to say for me, because the more you put that E syllable on that, I hate it. But where I come at with these sorts of aesthetic conversations is I'm a very functional person. And I sort of prioritize that over other things. So I will not go out of my way in daily life to spend money on clothes or furniture. I will live with what I have. I will find stuff cheaply and make do with that, because that's just kind of how I am as a person. I just lean a little bit more towards like the efficient and utility of those sorts of items. I also, especially, I don't know why we're talking about my interior decorating style, but like personally for interior decoration, I prefer things that might have sentimental value. So I might have something that is not necessarily the most aesthetically pleasing thing, but it's something I like to look at or I want to be reminded by. I don't think that translates to like the wardrobe of a show, but I do think that I like when improvised Shakespeare has a uniform that's somewhat like Elizabethan costume. I like, I did a student show here. We did the apocalypse form. I asked the students to wear bright colored shirts if they were in the pre-apocalypse section, and then go for more like muted earthy tones if they're in the sort of like apocalypse section. And like just sort of like having a light influence on it. I don't know that I would go as far as you guys. I think you're both a little bit more into sort of the fashion world than I am. I think you both take a lot more care and pride in how you look than I do. I can talk about what that means for me and how I feel about that. But for me, like I'm happy with people wearing a loose concept, right? So I hear what Chris is saying, but I'm also thinking to myself, like, I don't know if I want to see a bunch of people in browns. Like, that's not super exciting to me. Like, what about a little flash of color? What if everyone had a certain color? I do think like theater blacks maybe get overplayed a little bit. I've seen a lot of groups where it's black on black. It's not my favorite thing in the world to look at. And it was really funny. The education director for a student show made a comment that, no, don't just wear blacks. You're going to be invisible with the black curtain behind you. Like, wear a little something that pops out. I think we tell people, oh, be careful. You don't want to wear like white under those bright lights. But at the same time, we don't want people to just kind of like disappear and be uninspiring in their look. So maybe the white Converse pulls it all together in a way that, you know, my subscription of Esquire hasn't quite filled me in on yet. But when you guys sort of talk about, oh, and no product in the hair, like I never wear product in my hair, maybe Moroccan oil sometimes. So it's just, definitely a different take on things.
But it all ties into what we're trying to talk about here, which is how the audience perceives us when we step out on stage. And I already have an idea about you if you're wearing whatever. You know what I mean? Even if it's nice, even if it works, just a button down, a blue button down, some jeans, like even the fit. And I don't want to. I'm not like having a good time. Like, this is what I like to do, but it is coming through my mind. I remember at I.O. in Chicago years and years ago, Jason Sudeikis showed up and did a show. He was on SNL at the time. And he had this rich black hoodie on. And he had these bright white Nikes on. And I was like, fuck, dude. He's just, if you just wrote it down, he's wearing a hoodie and tennis shoes. But I could tell there was some money spent on those items and they looked even like new. And I loved that idea. I loved like what that, I didn't love it for the performance necessarily, or I don't even remember the show, which is interesting. I just remember thinking, I want to be like that. I want to have money like that. But I'm saying even that, like I'm registering that. So for every performer I see in every show I see, I'm registering those looks. And, I don't know. It means something to me, I think. It means something to me. It does.
Well, if this is just a generic improv show, and Sam, thank you for sharing that. It was really interesting. I don't even know that I have a follow-up question, but it's interesting to me to think about, you know, functionalism versus like aesthetics. And like, because to me, and this, you and I were having this conversation in the furniture store, to me, aesthetics are functional, you know. When you walk into a space, you feel a certain way, you know, depending on the colors and the placement of the furniture and the flow of the room and the lighting, all the, like, whether or not you may even be aware of them, people feel certain ways when they walk in certain rooms. And to me, that is functional, you know? So it's interesting to me to think, I've always considered those the same. It's interesting to hear you talk about those as two different things. But maybe that's where we disagree, or maybe they're the same and there's a lot of overlap. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm also now even sort of thinking about in a show, you know, we're talking all about like what people wear, but we haven't, you know, we gave the Steppenwolf example and it was this beautiful set that had, you know, a ladder for a large bookshelf and, you know, great chairs and, you know, just the right sort of like off-center angle and a lot of, you know, fun lights in the stage itself. But I'm just sort of thinking about, okay, so we put all this attention into our wardrobe. And then two performers step out, they're three quarters towards the back of the stage and they're standing right across from each other. And like, what does that even kind of tell us? As opposed to two performers grab chairs and come straight down stage left and sit at the front of the stage, or, you know, we have an off balance kind of stage picture. And I think we're paying a lot of attention to the wardrobe, but if the question is like, how do we feel when the performers come out on stage, right? Oh, they're in that semicircle. They're looking side to side to see who's going to be the one getting the suggestion tonight. Aren't we still even processing all of that stuff too?
Yeah. I mean, look, bad improv is bad improv, whether you're wearing my ideal uniform or not, for sure. For sure. But I guess I'm thinking it'll be one less thing to pull. Like you said, you get pulled out of, you know, we're asking the audience to believe that we're at the fucking TGI Fridays and I'm holding this glass of wine and I'm fucking all the, we're asking to believe all this shit that isn't there. I guess it feels to me like this like neutral kind of palette of clothing would aid in that. That I wouldn't, then I'm like, I barely believe he's holding a glass of wine. And now I really don't believe that he's there because he's wearing a fucking t-shirt with a hole in it. I don't know. Yes, listen, we're talking about this now and I'm sounding so passionate about it. I've never said anything. Like I've never noted somebody for wearing, you know what I mean? For not wearing what I want them to wear. So it's not that important. It just would be nice. Or maybe it's for people like us, you know, who don't take the stage in the 2-3 quarter. Maybe it is for advanced performers to think about. Maybe if you're a very good player on a very good team, maybe this is the next level, you know, of blah, 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 blah.
I had no idea where this conversation was going, but to me, like, I love the idea of improv aesthetics and like, yeah, how do you, and I don't know that a lot of people are even thinking about this, but like, yeah, how do you communicate to, it goes to production. How do you communicate what this show is about or what it will be just by what you're wearing and considering it? I think it's nice to have the conversation with your improv ensemble or people you're working with, just to have that conversation. Cause I think a lot of people don't, some people do, and you see them, you know, the black shirts and the blue jeans. And sometimes I see a lot in clown, like people just wear all black, you know, and I actually do, Chris, want to get back to what you were saying, cause I interrupted you cause I loved active chino as a phrase. So I want to hear where that was going, if you can remember, but like, to me, I just want to wear clothes that I can move in, because I want to be ready for that. Like if I feel like my shirt's too tight, then my performance is equally restricted. And then I feel like held back. But then maybe it's also fun to see someone in super tight clothes moving a lot. Like, again, like you could play against type in a weird way, but I don't know. I just want to, so those, my ankle grabbing, pants that Sam references. Yeah. Those are my favorite. I love those. And I literally have holes in them because I refuse to get rid of them because I can't find replacements equally as good as them. But the day is coming, everybody. They'll have to be retired and then they belong in an improv museum. Right. But
I mean,
what were you saying about active chino?
Yeah, I'll get there in one sec. But I mean, there is some general conversations about aesthetic, right? I don't know. To me, when I think about UCB, I think it's synonymous with hoodie. Like, or especially if you're making fun of it, like, oh, a bunch of guys and girls in hoodies. I feel like UCB was known for being hip and casual. Or not just casual, but hip as well. Does that make sense? Like there was a different vibe on that stage, even though it wasn't a uniform. I don't know who's discussing it or not, but like coming from Second City, where there's also an aesthetic, which is, you know, the main stage aesthetic. They are here, paid audience to see us perform. So we're wearing the white pants, with the tucked in white shirt and the black tie with a pop of color, Sam. Oh, we're all going to wear a little piece of red here or there. You know what I mean? It's like, give me a break. But anywho, so I think that some of those institutions do have that kind of underlying aesthetic, whether it's talked about a lot or not. But then like the indie scenes and stuff, or IO never had an aesthetic. Maybe it was, for a while it was black Converse and the flannel, the plaid, like you were talking about, Jamie. Active chino is similar to what Sam was talking about with you, Jamie, where, you know, a chino shouldn't have elastic on the ankles or the waist, but an active chino would. And that's like what Liam would wear, you know, like, oh, like if you just quickly looked over, you'd be like, he's just wearing blue pants, blue chinos. Very nice. But if you look a little closer, like, oh, they're kind of active. They're made to be in a rehearsal space because they got the elastic, Sam, on the waist and the ankles, and they're made to be bending and shaping and moving. So that's interesting to me. I'm just saying. I don't think I'd ever wear those on stage, you know.
Why not? Who's going to know? By the way, like, what's fascinating to me about these fashion conversations is that one time I was with some friends and they're like, oh yeah, the socks. And I was like, I just like worn sock, like white socks, but of course they're too high and that's not cool. You got to like wear them. Like, so they just sort of like match your sneaker or whatever. I was just like kind of floored that people are spending so much time clocking this stuff as opposed to paying attention to the real things like literature, politics, you know, other things that you should use your mental energy for.
But Sam, you just commented on my ankle grabbing shorts, my ankle grabbing pants. You just commented on my ankle grabbing pants.
Oh yeah, they're fantastic.
But Sam,
it's one of those things, though, that information comes in whether you like it or not.
Exactly. Look, I'm not proud. I'd rather read as many books as you do than own as many shirts as I do. Okay. That's a true statement. This is just who I am. This is how I ended up. I don't know what the fuck, a series of traumas and fucking whatever the fuck happened, and I'm here like this. So whether I want to or not, I'm not actively judging the individual performers like on purpose, like, let's see what they're wearing. But I do notice, that's an interesting top, or I wouldn't have worn a long sleeve tee with writing on the sleeves. That seems like it's coming at me no matter what. Now, whether you're clocking it or not, good for you if you don't clock any of that. But
why couldn't clock active chinos versus regular chinos? That would be like, I get like, okay, letters on a shirt, I'm not that oblivious to. Active chino versus regular chino? Chinos are just pants, right?
I'm insane. Yeah, they're just pants. Okay, we got to wrap this up. But let's pull back a little bit here. When seven individuals walk out on stage, there is information being presented, right? Some Malcolm Gladwell blink shit, right? We are Snapchat. We are taking in information. Should we be controlling what that information is to the best of our ability? Meaning, should we be presenting as blank as possible? That said, now that I think about it, I would love to see, you know, say like an all queer show, LGBTQ plus show, where they are expressing themselves in whatever ways they want. Like I see forms for that as well. But even that, there's forethought, I think. I think that's really cool to see you expressing yourself on purpose. I think when we're not thinking about how we are appearing or presenting, we still need to recognize that information is, I'm falling apart here. I think you kind of know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think it's the intention to present intentionally, you know? So like, because I'm thinking, especially if it's an improv show where like you don't know what you're going to be playing or what situation you might be in. It's nice to have somewhat of a neutral energy so that you can pivot or play without it being distracting or take the audience out of it. But I will say, like, with this like queer show that you're talking about, Chris, I've seen some like all queer casts, and then they do like really express themselves more so than like generic improv team would. And what's interesting about that is like, because they're like advertising the show as like, you know, an all queer cast or whatever their thing is, they're inviting you to consider the people on stage along with the characters.
Great,
and I think
that is nice.
And so I guess I don't want to say like, oh, only neutrals, because if you are trying to invite the people in the audience to look at not just the characters, but the people performing as well, then I think more expression works within the theme of the show. So I guess it's hard to throw down these rules.
I guess it's about intention, though, like you said, intention.
Yeah, I think it's the intention behind it.
I think there's a lack of intention in a lot of, including myself. I mean, I just try to look nice enough. I have a show tonight. I'm going to look nice enough. I'm not going to do my dream idea. Also, if I did my dream idea, which I think about all the time, Sam, I would look insane. If I was wearing flowy beige linen pants and a flowy beige linen shirt in Heyday Tonight, I would look insane. But if we all did it, ooh.
That's right. That's the yes anding of the fashion choices.
Sam said you'd all look insane.
But never mind. I won't get started on that. But that agreement is nice.
I saw ABD, Amanda Blake Davis on Heyday, and Annie when she comes to visit also on Heyday. Occasionally they will wear the popular, what are they called? Jumpers? Rompers? But they're not shorts, like full pants, full long sleeve, almost like a mechanics jumper, you know, like I said, it looks clean. You know, I was like, oh, I could see a whole team in these, a kind of a uniform. I mean, I guess it gets a borderline a little dorky, like, hey, we're the.
I saw a duo do it and I was just like, I just want you to work in like an auto repair shop.
Okay,
like, I don't want
okay.
any scenes that aren't in an auto. And but it's just so interesting to me. We're doing some mask workshops, and we did like neutral mask for a little bit. And, you know, part of the idea is that this is a muscle to try to exercise. How do you get down to neutral? At the same time, kind of recognizing there is no such thing as neutral. You're never going, even in your example of all brown, we're like, no, that would look crazy to see all dressed like that on a team. So it's like, even our best attempts at neutral would probably impart some information in some way. And so maybe to go back to your sort of intentionality point, or even if we think we're being neutral or we're not conveying information, let's double check our assumptions there. And maybe at least
you're right.
Like an auto mechanic, or like me, I look like a teacher if I'm in a polo and khakis. So like, let's not do that.
I just want to see, I think here's another one. Everybody has to buy a 10 pack of Hanes white tees. And while you're at Target, a pair of khakis, not active khakis, just khakis. And then I still like this kind of white Converse, and we'll wear that and we'll walk out like that.
Well, what you guys are talking about makes me think, it's like, yeah, I guess if everybody's in jumpers, then it's like, yeah, this scene belongs in an auto mechanic shop or like an army base underneath an airplane or something like that. And it feels weird if it's not. But maybe there's like a collective neutrality where the wardrobe is balanced. And so it feels like there's a collective neutral, because like there's a little black and blue, and then there's a little white over here and neutrals. And then maybe somebody's wearing a red shirt or whatever.
Maybe that's what we do.
Collective neutrality.
Normally, though, maybe that's how we show up on stage.
Maybe we hope.
And, you know, as we get out here, let's, you know, even Jamie's dressing for comfort. It is, it's
dressing
it's
a little, for movement.
There's still, you know, you have interesting necklines, Jamie. You have interesting necklines, and this is worth talking about. You know what I
mean? Why have you never said anything to me before? It's like you wait to the last 30 seconds of an episode, and then you start talking about my neckline.
So this has been the Comedy Fix, everybody. You know, what did we land on here? I don't know if we landed on anything. I don't know if we landed on anything, but still fun to discuss. Still fun to discuss. And Sam, I wouldn't want you to change your relationship to clothing or to interior design if it meant we would lose that beautiful brain of yours. I want you to be putting the power towards that way. You know what I mean? Like, what did they say, Steve Jobs stuff wore the turtleneck so he wouldn't have to use that brain power on that? Is that
That's right. That's the uniform, right?
So he didn't have uniform. Don't get me wrong. My uniform takes a lot of my brain power. It's all the brain power I have. But I don't want you to change who you are, Sam, okay? And Jamie, I don't want you to change how you are. And I want to change how I am.